be right with you.
Now, people who know me and they know how much I love this state, some still are choosing not to hear why I made the decision to chart a new course to advance the state. And it should be so obvious to you.
Well, Sourdough Jack says, golly, left without a piss to pail in. What do you know?
From the Davis Concert Hall at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, it's an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, Clyde Stubblefield on drums, and I'm Jim Packard. In this hour of What Do You Know, the author of Cold, Bill Stever, with music by Steve Brown and the Bailers, along with a What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now, the man who is a real sarkala, Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much, Fairbanks. Good to see you, Fairbanks. Good to be here. Thank you for taking us in and sheltering us and giving us sustenance. Great to be here. This just in, Sarah Palin treated and released following a Twitter blackout. She kept muttering the same 140 characters over and over. Quit making things up, you know. You really can't make this stuff up. Think about it. The former governor just happened to bail out just as all the fires broke out, you know. So, Sarah Palin, fire starter. Could have been all those ethics complaints, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, they say. Now, reports say that Sarah Palin is quitting her marriage to better serve her husband. I don't know, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
Get that old spark back, I think.
That's right.
Not to go back to the fire thing, but... Wife. You know, what is wife? Just another title. She don't need no title. Need no stinking title. Apparently she resisted Todd's stimulus package. Belatedly, of course. Be better able to practice the abstinence she's known for, of course, at this point. So. And the added benefit, she will be eligible for the Cougar on ABC TV this fall. So. And that is must-watch TV, I tell you. That's the Barracougar, you know, it'll be... Whoa, I would tune in. Temporarily, what is she doing temporarily, people? We've sort of lost track of her for about a minute or two here. She's apparently going to assume the presidency of Alaska Land. It'll be on display during normal business hours. And, she's working on a book called Profiles in Quidditch. Or Quittage. Would that be Quittage?
Quittage, yeah.
Quittage. There's a rumor that she might become ambassador to Narnia. And someone else saw her working at Freddy's in the outdoor gear, but I don't know if that's... That's unlikely.
That's just a resemblance.
But she would get a discount. She might do it. Might be doing some ice road trucking, I heard. Or someone said she'll be training for Yukon Quest. Yes! Yukon Quester is here. Time to sign up, isn't it? Coming up. You signing up?
Tomorrow.
Today. Today. It's today. This morning, I think you can sign up right now, actually. Yukon Quest. And then someone said she's touring with Ted Nugent, but I don't... I can't see her doing backup.
No.
No. Possibly joining the road company of Evita. Don't cry for me, Madanuska. Then they said she's going to do a radio show. Did you hear that? That was another possibility of all things obvious. Get her own show there. If it's so obvious, why don't we get it if it's so obvious?
Yippee-doo.
Who said yippee-doo?
Nobody here.
I don't know. The sighting of Sarah with a woman in Argentina remains unconfirmed. Spending most of her time, I guess, going through all the gift cards and writing thank you notes. Got a lot of those. And sorting the sourdoughs from the chicacos. Chicacos. Huh? Chaco, chicacos. It's Yiddish, isn't it? I don't know what this... Chichacos. 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 Those are people who come here from Idaho. They're called Chichacos, apparently. Sarah Pack, up way up over a million now, in search of an office that can hold her, ladies and gentlemen. No office can hold her. I don't see an elderly citizen Palin, you know, in later years, you know, ending up alone in the Wasilla mansion there burning her sled Rosebud for heat. I don't see that happening to her. I really don't. I think something's gonna break. When Sarah pulled out of the office, actually, the Russian Homeland Security went down to green from red almost immediately. So much smoke, of course, Sarah can no longer see Putin from her deck, rearing his head, as is his wont. So it's kind of, actually, the smoke has been, the smoke is lifting. That's the good news here. We've had forest fires on every side of, surrounding us for some reason. They're trying to burn us out. Then they're going to take our houses. Our houses, what I'm saying.
Right. Our houses, what are you saying?
Yeah. It's kind of like living in Pompeii, in a way, you know. But at least it will all be preserved, we know that. No. Tourists will come here and see her. So that's a good thing, though. Air breathers have been advised to stay indoors. And water breathers to stay under, that's pretty much. Smoke from the fires has shut down the Fairbanks International Airport. International now, that's... First of all, that's a bit strong, isn't it? But I guess... Where do they go that's international? Where? They go to Russia? Oh, you can go to Russia then, huh? Can you go to, like, Siberia then, probably, huh? Get it. Where? Frankfurt? Why would you want to go to Frankfurt, I'd say? And I guess there's a flight to Austin now, too, so it's kind of limited, let's face it. It's not really international to go to Austin, but I don't know. Anyhow, if we can't leave here, actually, our group will be known as the Feldman Party. It'll be, you know, the ill-fated Feldman Party, aught nine. We're going to draw straws to see who we eat among them. I guess who I'm leaning toward. There's a lot of good eating there.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's okay. You know I mean it in the best possible way. Alaska fire policy is apparently to encourage them, which is kind of odd. I don't want to get involved in something that could be a little tricky here, but, you know. The firemen are right out of Fahrenheit 451. You know, they actually start the fires. It was a controlled burn, I guess, is what I understand, pretty much. An uncontrolled burn. They were tired of the spruce. They get tired of the spruce, and they get rid of them, and then they get a whole nother. And there's some ecological reason for just letting them burn, I guess. So it's a good thing. Quieted down quite a bit, didn't it?
Yes, it did. They're thinking about it.
One thing it does, it drives the moose right into Freddy's parking lot there where they can be, where they have the equipment to deal with them. The latest was the Hard Luck Fire, actually, not too far. And that was caused by lightning, of course. White lightning. And then Wisconsin just sent some firefighters up here from Wausau and northern Wisconsin. Yep. Those guys are up here, and they had to restrain them from pulling out their hoses, though. So we do things differently in Wisconsin. We just, you pull out your hose at the drop of a hat there. We don't have a fire policy. We just have a hose policy. Okay. But the Department of Natural Resources in Alaska said the fires are necessary for fireweed production. So I think... And they can be used in scones. We've proven that in a nice little recipe in the News Miner look a couple days ago. It's very nice. Basically, I guess the policy is to save the cabins of the guys you know. Even if you don't like them, you save the cabins of the guys you know. You know, maybe you don't like them. It's not a consideration. Then they got this big 747 that's circling around here, dropping little plastic cups of water on the fires, throwing little bags of peanuts. Well, in other news you can't make up, Alaska is a great success with the Clunkers for Cash program here. Actually taking the clunkers that people have turned in, putting them back on the road. I see a lot of vintage Blazers, Silverados, Broncos, Aerostars, and Dakotas out there. They're going faster than you can push them out of the landfill, ladies and gentlemen. The 7-year-old driving while his mom was passed out drunk in the car earns his wolf patch. That's a little local news there for you. The Nothing's Permanent Fund. Down to a can of Copenhagen and a 6 of Silver Gulch. You know, that's fine with him, apparently. That's fine with him. The drought is ending at an awkward time, threatening the uncontrolled burn. Fishermen report catching already smoked salmon, so that's kind of a time saver. Hunting season coming up, some changes for that. Non-resident hunters are only permitted to bag non-resident caribou this next season. And with hunting season nearly upon us, hunters are reminded to make sure you get your own meat back. To my dad always told me. I still do. Now I guess that's what he meant. I had no idea what he meant. Avoid the impact areas at Wainwright, as the moose have dropped thousands of landmines out there. And a little reminder that a black bear ticket entitles you to one dance, and the bear leads. Excellent. In other news still, the Alaska Attorney General makes ethics optional. And go figure, there's gold in living good. How about that? Who would have thought money dumb and living good would be where they would find? Huh? You said what? Live and good?
Yeah.
Oh, live and good? Live and good? In Money Dome. Okay, well, it's your state. You can do what you want with it. I think you've proven that. The Wainwright private who burgled K-Bar D, spotted wearing stack of Stetsons, four pairs of spurs, big buckled bandoleros, and chest-to-chin gold-tip bolo ties. And you're out of uniform, soldier. North Star Ballet to perform Moose Lake. Ex-Governor Palin probed for Yahoo account. Smiley faces may have been on state time. According to the Alaska Water Safety Statistics, 9 out of 10 Alaska males are sinkers. Well, what it is, the guys don't much like wearing Mae Wests, you know. They don't like them on them, you know. And still other news, Holland America blames cruise ship stand-up comedian for overboard fatality. Kuzinki. Kuzinki. Kuzinki? Is that close? Kuzinki? Anyone hear from Kuzinki? Okay, then I can call it anything. The Kuzinki Airport to Nowhere gets $15 million to go to Akiachak. So now they're going somewhere. The Republic of Esther secedes from the Union. Nobody takes it personally. Esther rules! Esther rules. We're on Esther rules here. The new governor, Parnell, said to share Palin values, cute little poplin sleeveless snap front Carhartts, hoodies with running shorts and anklets, and a closet mix of Arctic Cat and Oscar de la Renta. She's a complex person. Meanwhile, Uncle Ted is doing remodeling full time now. They've jacked up that cabin more times than they've gone up another story or two, I think, and that thing is like, it's a tower now. It's actually first office tower in that area. The dancing mattress ranch man to run for governor. You ought to run for something, I'll tell you. He's too good just to be at the mattress ranch there. And just this note, Congregation Orha Zafon. Orha Zafon. Say it any way you want. This is Alaska. I can say it any way I want. The Frozen Chosen up there will offer free brisses at the What Juno event right after this show. So look for them out in the parking lot. How much do they take off? Not much. You... That's all the Fairbanks and Alaska news. Edison, thank you so much. Great to be here. Thank you for having us.
I mean it. I like it here.
If I had one outdoor skill, I would live here in a minute. I don't have even one. I got a pair of decent shoes, but that's about it. You know, I have no other skills. Oh, by the way, speaking of, you know, last time we were here, we did a wedding, and the couple are doing fine, and the marriage stuck, and apparently it was legal and everything, and we're all surprised. But they were going to be here tonight, but they are in Sweden, because this is the guy married Jewish fellow married a Swedish girl, which, of course, is, among Jewish males is like... I mean, you have the Virgin Mary, but we have Swedish girls... And he did it. More credit to him. Yes, sadly, Anna, Sky, and I won't be in town for our coming visit. We'll be in Sweden disappointing Anna's family some more. So they're up there now. But they're doing well, and they send a picture and everything. And she's still looking very Swedish. And I actually, I have an ulterior motive for coming back this time. There is I'm here to reclaim the Kreitz and Feldman gold mine on Moose Creek. In doing my research, I discovered there is actually a Feldman gold mine here. Kreitz and Feldman. And it was a big producing gold mine before the war, and then they cut it out during the war. And we certainly haven't heard from Kreitz all these years, so I'm assuming it's for the Feldmans to divvy up among themselves. So I'm going to be looking into that. That's coming up. So great to be here, and we'll see what we can do with that. Right now, we have a gentleman coming on here who's just written a book, and it's really a great book, actually. Unusual book as well, Bill Strever. The book is called Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places, and it's about being cold everywhere and anywhere throughout time, historically, and into the future, and what that means. And Bill Strever is just the guy to talk about it. He's here with us today. Bill Strever.
Hello again.
Yeah, so I made a list reading your book. I had to make a list because there are so many things to consider. Yes. Did you have something you wanted to add?
No, you go right ahead.
Okay.
Start with your list.
How are you, by the way?
I'm doing great.
Good. Thank you for coming. I know you're on vacation and you made a U-turn or something.
Well, kind of an S-turn. Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you?
We were in beautiful McCarthy, Alaska.
Yeah. Hey, what were you doing up there?
Camping, looking around, playing around.
Yeah, looking around, playing around. Okay.
Drinking beer.
Okay. Reading your book, and there are so many tips here on cold, on being cold, avoiding cold, dealing with cold. For example, a blowtorch may not be the best thing for ice dams.
That's right. Straight from the insurance industry.
Yeah. cotton kills. Wool rules.
Wool is better than cotton, absolutely.
Okay. You're not dead till you're warm and dead.
Well, that's right. That's right, especially in Fairbanks.
Yeah. Layers.
Layers are good.
Layers are good, unless it's cotton layers.
Cotton layers, not so good. Wool layers, good. Synthetic layers, really good.
Okay.
Caribou layers, even better.
Yeah. Freezing your boat into the ice, probably not a good idea for travel.
It's worked for some people.
It worked.
Others,
yeah.
Not so well.
Not so well, yeah. All right. There's more here. I don't want to. Inner layer fur in, outer layer fur out.
That's right. That's caribou.
That's caribou. Yeah. And that works too. But the musk oxen are probably the best you can do, right?
The musk ox fur, the kiviat is just fantastic.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Warmest natural fiber.
But what do you have to skin them though, or something?
No. A problem, you could try this. You could crawl up under the musk ox with a comb, and you comb out the under fur.
Honey, would you comb out the musk ox? He's shedding everywhere. I just can't stand it anymore. What does this say? Oh, yeah. This book is interesting because half the time you're like in the Serengeti or you're diving in the Philippines thinking about being cold.
Well, that's the best way to do it, right?
Yeah, but yeah. I think you've earned the right to do it. Or like you're in London and you say to a cab driver, there used to be polar bears here in Piccadilly Circus or something, and the guy says nothing to you, right?
They look at you like you're a little bit nuts and drive on.
Yeah, but this is interesting because this book, I mean, you're looking at cold historically and philosophically and other ways, too, with L-Y endings.
Well, that's right. Scientifically.
Scientifically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
What gave you the idea for doing the book?
What gave me the idea for writing a book about cold? Well, maybe Alaska.
Yeah.
Alaska winters. Cold's everywhere here. It's sort of in your face when it's not smoky.
Yeah, it's in your face when it's not smoky. We just had, was there a record low this winter? Well, not the record, but it was close, wasn't it?
Well, it seems like there's a record low and a record high every winter and every summer. Right?
Yeah. And you wrote about the tunnel here that's just outside of town.
The permafrost tunnel.
And so I went to see it.
Really?
I got to see this for myself. And
excellent.
It was really interesting, actually.
You went inside?
I went inside, yeah.
Great.
And I looked at the ice wedges and so forth and saw the polygons forming.
And the step bison bones in the walls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting feature. I'm still not clear on why exactly the Army decided to... Was it for military reason?
Well, I think originally back in the height of the Cold War, the thought was if you could tunnel into permafrost and build some kind of fortified structures, it might work out, and then they realized that all the hot computers and everything probably wouldn't do so well in a permafrost tunnel. But they kept the tunnel going, and it's used by, I think you probably know this, by researchers today.
Yeah, there are a lot of researchers in there when we were in there. And how are things in Tierra del Fuego, by the way? Been down there recently?
I have not been down to Tierra del Fuego recently, but I'm sure folks down there are doing just fine and probably listening to your show.
Yeah. You're a diver by training? Is that what you started?
I am a diver. I have spent about 10 years of my life as a commercial diver and also still an avid sport diver.
Oh, you still do? And do you dive in cold waters?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like diving in Alaska is some of the best in the world.
Yeah. But how do you do it? Because a wetsuit doesn't really keep you warm, right? You pump air, warm air into the wetsuit?
No, you use a dry suit, so it's sealed around your body, and you if it works well, you don't get wet. If you do get wet, you get cold.
Yeah. And it doesn't really seal, as I think you've proven on...
In the episode I wrote about in my book, that particular suit wasn't working so well. It was leaking a bit, and yes, it got very cold on that dive.
Yeah. The guys who came to... Is there a fad to discover the North Pole at some point in history? It was like there are different teams trying to do it at the same time, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Big quest for the North Pole and the South Pole.
How did that develop?
I think it was just part of the age of exploration. Back in the 1700s, people were looking around the world, finding all kinds of new things, and then as the 1800s rolled around, they started to head north.
Yeah. And these guys were amazing, and they all worked on sort of different philosophies about how to get there.
They did, and some were smarter than others, and some survived and some didn't.
Yeah. Who was the smartest one?
Who was the smartest one? The ones who stayed home.
Yeah. Was there a prize being offered for the first man to the pole or something? No,
I don't think there was a prize other than the prize of fame and survival, right? Presumably you'd have to come back to claim your prize, so survival would be nice.
Yeah. Did they have a really good idea about what they were getting into or what they'd be in for?
No, I don't think they really did. Over time, they developed a better idea, but there it wasn't so long ago that people had the notion that as you went further north, you would get past the sea ice. And you should take a boat with you because you would have to sail. Maybe that'll happen. Who knows? But the idea was that there was this ring of ice, and further north it would actually become tropical.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Not quite right.
Wow. That's still not proven, as far as we know. And your book goes month by month, basically. So you're starting, in the beginning, you're swimming in Prudhoe Bay.
That's right. I started the book in June, and the idea was to take it somewhere in June that was still cold. So June, and went for a little swim up in Prudhoe Bay, and more than just a swim, lots of people go swimming in the Arctic. It's kind of the polar bear club. You dive in and you get out. In fact, we might ask how many people here have done it. Probably lots of people in the audience have taken the polar bear plunge.
Scream if you can. We can't see your hand. Yeah, okay. Oh, that's cool.
That's kind of how they sound when they do it, when they jump in. They start swimming. But for the book, I decided that I should wade in, and I actually dove in, but then should stay in the water, wading in up to my neck, and stayed in the water for about 5 minutes just to see what it would feel like.
Yeah. Is there any place on Earth that's colder than, let's say, Barrow or...
Oh, well, sure, yeah. The coldest place on Earth is in Antarctica, air temperatures.
Oh.
The water temperature, of course, up in Prudhoe, once you get down to, zero C, water starts to freeze, or a little bit colder in salt water, but it's about as cold as it gets for water.
Yeah. And what I like also are these books, the study of cold by researchers over the years when they first got the idea that they could study these. My favorite is the guy who went up in the balloon to draw snowflakes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes up in the balloon, and of course it gets colder and colder as he goes higher. And also he's going at an increasing altitude and thinner air and less oxygen. And eventually he loses consciousness, and his assistant who's with him, and his assistant doesn't have a whole lot of options and can't really get out of the balloon at 25,000 feet. And he's trying to pull the release cord on the balloon, but his hands are so cold that he can't pull the release cord. His hands are just frozen up. So he uses his teeth and he grabs the release cord, and they slowly sink back down. And as the scientist regains consciousness and continues writing these books about how the atmosphere changes as he goes higher and how snowflakes look differently at different altitudes.
Yeah. So it was a success.
It was a success, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That could have been worse.
Survival as a measure of success.
And then the animals themselves and how they deal with it. Like a moose deals with cold pretty well.
Yeah, moose do well in the cold. And different animals have different ways of dealing with it. You can migrate. Migration's a good option, right?
Yeah.
Some people do that.
Yeah.
You can tolerate, like moose do. They just kind of tolerate through the winter, and they try to feed through the winter and do the best they can. And you can hibernate.
Yeah.
So to me, the king of the cold is the little ground squirrel, the Arctic ground squirrel that you can see in the mountains around here and up north. And
is that the same as the marmot, or is that different?
No, it's different than a marmot.
Okay, we've got marmots coming on later in the show.
Ah, good. Yeah. The Arctic ground squirrel is a.
Is that a true hibernator?
It is an absolute true hibernator. It's completely deathly asleep. Its blood temperature drops right down to freezing, and somehow, as it just before its blood starts to freeze, it wakes back up. Seemingly spontaneously, it starts to shiver. Its brain waves go into a pattern that suggests it's dreaming, whatever squirrels dream about, who knows. And it warms up for a day or so, and then it starts to cool off again, and it does that all through the winter. So it only warms itself up and burns calories when it absolutely has to, and other than that, it's just cooling off and going into a near-freezing state.
Mm-hmm. But humans can't do that.
Most humans cannot do that.
Most humans. Wasn't there a group where they slept all the time when they were up there on their way?
Some of the explorers, in fact, I would say most of the explorers that overwintered, and even most people nowadays that overwinter in the far north, it's dark and people tend to sleep more.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a familiar feeling here in Fairbanks.
I don't remember which guys, which was that the bird expedition or one of those?
Bird spent a fair bit of time sleeping. Stephenson was here.
But that was the carbon monoxide probably more than.
I'm sorry?
That was sleeping probably because of the carbon monoxide poisoning.
In Bird's case, he was sleeping partly because of carbon monoxide. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They didn't figure that one out. Yeah. Yeah, there's something you slept more and more, but humans really cannot do it because you have to recycle certain essential fluids.
That's right. Yeah, humans have things they need to take care of and they wake up in the night.
Yeah, that's hard to do. And bears, now the bears are not true hibernators.
Well, you know, you hear people say that. I've even had kids put their hand up and say, bears aren't real hibernators.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of depends on how you define hibernation. Bears definitely go into a deep stupor, a deep sleep, and they are doing things like reprocessing nitrogen and calcium in their bones is being reworked while they're quote-unquote asleep. They don't need to urinate. They don't need to defecate. They don't need to eat for weeks or months at a time. But they, in many cases, will wake up in the middle of winter, sometimes go for a wander. Or if you crawl into their lair, they might wake up. They might not.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Well, wasn't there someone who fell in a...
Oh, there's been more than one person that's fallen into a lair. In fact, two people I know have fallen through into polar bear dens. Both of them walked away unharmed, and the mother bears reacted a little bit, but not too badly.
After a while, probably. Somewhat
after a while, yeah. But they were pretty quick to wake up. I think polar bears, I think probably as a generalization, are less of a hibernator than, say, a brown bear under similar conditions or a grizzly bear.
Yeah. Now, can a human can become more acclimated to the cold, though? That's possible.
Thankfully, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And how do you do that?
Well, I think people do it a lot of different ways. One way is by buying the right clothes, you know. Yeah. And of course, the first step is to move somewhere really cold.
Yeah.
But one way is I think people change the way they dress, they change the way they eat, they change the way they behave. So you have all these things going on that make you feel like you're acclimating to the cold. And probably there's some physiological changes, too. There's been some work done on mailmen in Canada, postal delivery guys. And it showed that in wintertime, their vascular system changes in their fingers and their toes and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it has been done, but it's not really proven does it work?
Does it work? Does it work for every person? Probably not. Some people just become increasingly miserable, and then they move to Florida. Right. Others do fine.
All right, smart clothes, that's another possibility here. The Hickel Highway came up in the book, and that's kind of interesting.
The Hickel Highway is
because
amazing.
He was like a prophet, wasn't he, of there being oil on the North Slope. He had a vision or something. He said there is oil on this slope or something.
He might have been a Monday morning prophet. There was oil. You know, everybody knew there was oil on the slope. It's been known. The Inupiat knew there was oil. The Eskimos knew there was oil way before Europeans showed up on the scene. In fact, they used to use oil to heat their homes.
Oh yeah, because it seeps up
into ponds and places, and they were soaking tundra into that oil, and they would burn it, especially when they were low on seal oil.
Yeah.
So it wasn't news that oil was up there. What was amazing about Hickel was his sort of panache, just to grab a couple of guys on Caterpillar tractors, on bulldozers, and said, "Boys, head north."
Yeah.
And off they went.
So there was one of several or many ill-advised attempts. They really didn't know what they were getting into, what they were doing, what they had to deal with in building this highway.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think there were certainly people around that could have said to Wally Hickel, this may not be the best way to build a highway. But some of it was sort of theatrical, I think, and some of it was to make a statement and give it a go. And Alaska's full of stories like that.
Yeah. And yet the ice road truckers, they drive on stuff that's not much better than that.
Yeah, but it's a little different because the Hickel Highway, they intentionally plowed into the tundra thinking that they could make a road that would last, and obviously it wouldn't last. As soon as it thawed out, the ground ice started to collapse and the whole thing flooded. And you can fly over parts of it today and still see this tremendous straight scar going all the way to the horizon.
Well, that's pretty cool, actually, in a way, in an odd way.
Pretty cool, right? Yeah.
Darn cool. Ice age. The next ice age is minutes away. Are we between ice ages, right?
It depends on how you look at it. We're certainly in what's thought of as an interglacial, so some would argue we're still in the Pleistocene Ice Age, and of course we're in the Holocene period, but some would argue that the Pleistocene is going along and we're in an interglacial, we're between glacial periods, so the huge ice sheets that used to cover Ohio and New York and Boston, they've pulled back, and all we're left with is sort of the northern ice cap, hopefully for a few more years, the Greenland ice and the Antarctic ice. And some would argue, and in fact in the 70s, argued very strongly that the ice was coming back, that we were due for a return of the glacial period, and it was going to get colder very, very quickly. And there's reasons to believe that. There's cycles out there that suggest that sometime in the next few thousand years, we would expect it to get colder once again. And in the book, when I say it's minutes away, that's in a reduced time scale where I'm talking about the Earth, the entire history of the Earth as a decade, I think, was the story I used in the book. Compress everything down to a decade and we might be into another ice age in just seconds. Mm-hmm. But also that's sort of thrown out of kilter with all of our misbehavior and burning of fossil fuels. So who knows what's going to happen in 2 seconds or tomorrow or whatever, but it does seem like things are getting warmer rather than colder at the moment.
Yeah. Global warming, where do you fall on that?
Where do I fall?
Are you in favor of it or are you
Alaskans for global warming, right? I guess I fall on it. It's a tough technical topic, and it does seem to be getting warmer in the past few years. And if all else being equal, if you dump tons and tons and megatons of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, one would expect it to become warmer.
Yeah. For this book, did you have to do some things to yourself? Like, did you have to approach hypothermia just so you could write about it?
Oh, sure. That's how I started the book. In fact, before I even was certain that I was going to write this book, I decided to try that and just see what it felt like to spend...
How is it? What does it feel like?
It's an experience.
Pretty scary, isn't it?
I'm not so sure I would call it scary. It's different. You know, as you get colder, and most people would say it's unpleasant, but... As you get colder, you go through stages, and you don't have to get very cold before your mind starts to slow down. And as your mind starts to slow down, it becomes maybe less unpleasant, right? Because you're not thinking straight.
Yeah. And it does go through stages.
Oh, absolutely. It goes through stages. People talk about the umbles, and the umbles mean when you're starting to get cold, you start to mumble because your jaw muscles start to freeze up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you start to fumble, so you might have a hard time working the zipper on your parka, for example.
Yeah.
And then you tumble and you fall down, and that's sort of, it's all over at that point. You're so cold, you're no longer really in control.
And you're irascible along the way, too.
Yeah, irritation is a symptom that some people have, sure.
So you're either middle-aged or you're suffering from hypothermia.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah. Well, it's a fantastic book, really. You've gotten an amazing response to this, too.
Yeah, I've been really pleasantly surprised by the reviews. It's been just a great experience.
And I know one guy said to you in the course of this, you should write a book called Warm or Hot or something like that. And is that what you're doing now?
Yeah, that's right. A friend of mine, early on in the book, I told him what I was doing, and he said, "Are you nuts? Why don't you write a book about warmth, and you can do all the research in Aruba?" And actually now I am working on a book that the working title is Heat, A Natural and Unnatural History.
Oh, well, that sounds very good. I look forward to that one, too. Bill Strieber, Cold is the book, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places. This is a good read. Nice to have you with us. Bill Strieber, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, thank you. Everybody's been so nice to us. It's been wonderful. Carolyn Leonard, elementary teacher, what are you doing tonight? All right, kids. This is Leonard. He's putting the moves on me, kids. Seems to me, I don't know, maybe I'm reading this wrong. Where is Mrs. Leonard? Huh? Or is it Miss Leonard or Mrs. Leonard? Ms. Leonard. Ms. Leonard. Ms. Hi, Ms. Leonard. Come on, stand up here and come out here. Let's meet Ms. Leonard, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, dear? I don't know, so is his name Leonard, too?
It's Wildridge, but I am married to him.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, well, that certainly curtails this conversation. Oh, dear. Where do you teach?
Wood River Elementary.
Wood River Elementary, the fighting... You don't have a mascot? How about marmots? We got marmots.
I don't remember.
The fighting marmots of Wood River.
We're the wolf pups.
The wolf pups, that's what I meant to say. Thank you, dear. I guess I won't see you later after all. It's a nice thought, though. We're going to play the What Do You Know quiz, a chance for some fabulous prizes, or at least prizes. And some of them are quite fabulous. Before we can do that, we have to know who can. Yes, this is your cue. You have to get up. Yeah. Walk over here. I'll do this. Okay. And you are?
Maggie Billington.
Maggie Billington. Would you do the honors? Would you do the honors, please?
The four disclaimers. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Hey, I found that Time to Make a Difference clock in a dumpster. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to try the math quiz. This means if you think you've got what it takes, and you do have what it takes. I couldn't resist you no matter what the situation was.
I'm so excited. Okay.
Imagine how I feel. And you are?
Mimi Williams.
And Mimi, what do you do in life as we know it?
Well, actually, I'm a mom and a wife, and I'm a student here too at UAF.
Wife and student, what are you studying?
Elementary education.
Mimi, give me one good reason we should play this quiz.
Well, I wanted to see the show so bad that I came all by myself because my husband wouldn't come, but I still came.
Wouldn't come. All right, Mimi, let's prove him wrong. Let's prove you right. Oh, you're juggling a lot there, huh? With you got your kids, you got the marriage, you got the going to school. It's kind of tough. That's a tough
yeah.
road at home.
Keeps you from getting bored, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Should I take my gum out?
Yes. So stick it under the table. Okay, that's elementary education 101, I think. Mimi. Are you from around here, Mimi? Or are you?
No, actually, I'm from the Bay Area, but I've been here for about 13, 14 years, so I guess,
yeah
I'm Alaskan now.
Have you acclimated?
No.
No?
No.
You don't go outdoors at all? Or you stay,
I try not to in the winter. Now with all the smoke, not so much in the summer either.
Yeah, okay, so you're just pretty much inside, hole up there, and you come out to go to class, you got to go to class.
Yeah, that's true, most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
I do, often.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
You know this... quiz work, someone out there calls in, plays along with you.
Yes, and I...
Okay.
Yes.
It's teamwork.
Right.
And Jim Packard.
Michael.
Hi, Jim Packard.
Hi, Mike.
And still got the camera on your head, just a vestige.
It's just a faux camera at the moment.
A faux camera.
Yeah.
Jim, how does someone get to play this quiz?
Since this is an encore presentation, do not call to answer the qualifying question.
Okay. That's a lot easier. And the phones ringing. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're fake, but they're ringing. And we've got Martin on the line here from Fairbanks, of all places. Hey, Martin.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Oh, not bad. You?
I'm doing good. You know, why did you call?
Oh, this isn't Tradio?
Well, what have you got that you want to trade, Martin? Have you got a front-end loader or something I could use? We didn't ask the question yet.
Okay.
Yes, you anticipated this, but here's the question. Fairbanks has the world's largest rechargeable battery. You probably knew that. It's a 1,300-ton C-cell. It can power the city for how long on its own?
Well, I know it isn't very long. It's something like 17 minutes or something like that.
Like how many minutes?
I'm guessing around 17. I think it's less than 20 anyway.
Yeah. Jim, how close does he have to be?
He's close. Enough.
All right, Martin, it's 7 minutes. What I have here, 7:17. That's pretty darn close.
And we're going to have a 7 in it.
All right, we're going to let you have it, Martin. What Jim says goes. So what line are you in, Martin?
I'm a nurse.
You're a nurse? Are you working right now?
No.
Okay, that's good. That would be a breach of ethics or something. I don't know.
Or something.
Yeah. Martin, Mimi?
Hi, Martin.
Hi.
How are you? Doing pretty good? You can do all one-word answers, right? Martin?
Oh. I'll try and...
String a few together if you have. Okay, thank you. The two of you are a team right now. We have various categories in Jim Packard. What are they?
The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science or odds and ends.
Okay, Martin, you start off. What would you like?
How about places?
Places, okay. All right. Alaska wildlife troopers will cite you for knocking the wheels off. Is that A, removing the wheels of a trooper's ATV, stripping a rival hunter's Suburban of its down to its axles, or not leaving a caribou a leg to stand on? Knocking the wheels off. Talk it over now.
Well, Martin, I know it's okay to take the legs off of a moose. I think you probably have to be a little bit more careful about the antlers if you hadn't processed it right, you know, in the slaughtering process. But
mm-hmm. So you do get out. You do get out of the house. She was just kidding.
What I don't hunt, but could you read those choices again, Michael?
Yeah, removing the wheels off a trooper's ATV, stripping a rival hunter's Suburban to its axles, or not leaving a caribou a leg to stand on, or. In other words, just taking the legs off a caribou, I guess would be the other way of saying
it. Oh, and leaving the rest?
Yeah.
Martin, I think I'd go with state troopers, but I'm going to look over here at Michael and see you.
I think either of the first two could get you arrested, for sure.
Yeah. So you're going with C then, are you?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay. All right, C it is, that's right. Not properly using all the meat on a caribou. That is a no-no. Jim Packard?
One right, no wrong.
One right and no wrong. We're running a little low on time here. We're going to have to carry this over, Jim.
All right.
There's no way out of that possibility. Should we ask another question here? We got time for that?
You do. Current events, people, school, science, odds and ends.
All right, Mimi, what would you like?
How about we go with schools?
We go with schools. All right. All right, Fairbanks was founded accidentally. Literally, actually. After what accident? What accident was it? Was it a wildfire left one patch on the Chena? A steamboat ran aground, or a gold miner thought he was in Esther?
Well, I didn't do so hot on the first one. So.
The first one?
Yeah, on the first question.
I happen to know the answer to this one.
Yeah.
Barnett ran aground with a Lavelle Young.
I agree with that.
Don't be the wheelhouse at Alaska.
Yep, I agree with that.
All right. Ran aground, Barnett. Jim?
Two right, no wrong.
All right, you're on the road to success. Say what's left there, Jim.
Current events, people, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Martin, what do you have?
What are the choices left?
Current events, people, science, odds and ends.
How about current events?
Current events, right out of the news. Let's see if it is. Yes, it is. Guys will camp out overnight at 40 below for what?
Wow, I must have missed this one.
Oh, you missed that, huh? Any idea?
I don't think I caught that one either.
Oh, you didn't. Okay. Jim, I guess we have to
call.
Yeah,
Ron.
Yeah. It's for the moose permit. Minto Flats, the moose permit.
Oh, okay.
Because it's considered a sure bet. If you get one of those permits, you get a moose, see? Jim, were you going to say something?
I was going to give some of the categories.
Oh, the categories, yes. Go ahead.
Which are people, science, odds,
and
I
seem to be
ends.
Losing control of this entire event. Did you notice that?
Yeah, we're early in the show yet.
Categories are what?
The categories are people, science, odds, and ends.
Yeah. Mimi, what would you like?
Let's go with odds and ends.
Odds
since
and ends
we're in
it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Unlike revenge, moose heart is a dish best served hot, cold, or hot or cold. I'm very proud of this question, by the way. It's very... It's an educated question, showing I have some education. I'll read it again. Unlike revenge, moose heart is a dish best served hot, cold, or hot or cold.
Well, unlike revenge would not be cold, correct?
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Hot and cold would also consist of cold, so I think we should go with hot.
Sounds good to me.
Well...
Of course, on the other hand...
You know, this is Alaska, and
yeah,
you're going to be making...
people have different tastes.
You're going to be making sandwiches out of just about anything up here. You know that. That's a fact. So there's that to factor in. I mean, I may have been just too clever in setting up the question, you know. And it's working to your disadvantage.
Yeah, we'll call it clever.
Okay. All right, let's just say then...
hot and cold?
Moose heart is a dish best served hot, cold, or hot or cold?
I think Martin said hot, cold. Is that what
hot
you said?
Cold? Yes, hot or cold is right. Makes a good sandwich, a good stew. All right. Hi there. We're here in Fairbanks, and you should be too when you get the chance. A great place to visit, so make sure you do. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you know them. Now all of America is going to know them. Steve Brown and the Baylors.
Mama, please don't call me, for I've no more tears to cry. And your words, just like music, seem to tug at my inside. It's a wonder how you found me when my back's against the wall. And your eyes just see right through me, gazing to my guilty soul. And all the foolish things I've done, well, how I wish that I could fly. Now my noose has come undone. Well, Papa was a mean one, he never stuck around. And too much moonshine whiskey put him 6 feet underground. So I begged him for forgiveness and slept out on the lawn. Tell you, grabbed me by my short hairs, threw me back where I belong. I wish that I could fly. Now my noose has come undone. And your words are just like music, seem to tug at my inside. Well, it's a wonder how you find me when my back's against the wall. And your eyes just see right through me, gazing to my guilty soul. And all the foolish things I've done, can fly. Now my knees come undone.
Thank you, guys.
Here's Steve Brown, and there are the Baylors. So, Steve, we know your name because you're Steve Brown and the Baylors, but the Baylors are just kind of lumped together. Can you introduce the individual Baylors?
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Over to my left here, I've got Robin Feynman, vocals and guitar. Right behind her, we have Eric Graves on dobro.
Yeah. How about dobro?
Next to Eric, we've got Dave Parks on electric guitar. Todd Denick on upright bass. And in the back there, our own Cliff Hobson, who did jam once with Clyde from your band. So.
Yeah. All right. Here's some for the drummer. Sounds good. And how are things going for the band? You guys working a lot, huh?
Yeah, last week went down to Anderson playing at the festival.
Yeah.
And they treated us really well down there. Had a great time. And then we were on KUAC just the other night with Lori Neufeld. Thanks to Lori Neufeld. And she kind of is one of the reasons why we're up here tonight.
This should put you over the top here now. Yeah,
she really did. Huh? We owe her big time.
Yeah. This and the Midnight Special. And that's not on anymore, you know, so can't do that. How about another tune here? What do you got for us?
This is actually the title track off our new CD, which is available online. And we'll be signing CDs tonight out there in the back. This is called How Things Start.
Sounds great.
That I just met you, but really like to know you. Maybe you let me take you out for a little while. So meet me at the lunch place, try to put a smile on your face, and later we can go riding on the hills behind my place. It'll be blue skies and looking in your eyes. A little too long until I realize that I should take you home, it's getting late. This is how things start, I guess they say. This is how things start, I guess they say. Wish I had things my way. Cause you'd be right beside me. We'd be headed the same way. We both can't go back now. I wouldn't if I knew how. I'm satisfied and smiling, thinking back on yesterday. Back when it was blue skies and looking in your eyes. A little too long until I realized that I should take you home, it's getting late. This is how things start, I guess they say. This is how things start, I guess they say. I should take you home, it's getting late. This is how things start, I guess they say. This is how things start, I guess they say.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. That was great. Steve Brown and the Baylors.
Thanks, thanks. Good job.
Look for them. Buy their music. See them. Steve Brown and the Baylors. And speaking of local pride, now you have a guy here who could have been on Survivor. And turned it down, ladies and gentlemen. What kind of a man turns down Survivor to chase marmots across Alaska? I'll tell you what kind of a man that is. My kind of man. Aaron Gunderson, ladies and gentlemen. A man's man. A ladies' man, a marmot's man. He's a good guy.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Now, this Survivor thing.
Right.
That was an offer you could refuse, apparently. I bet you no one ever refused to do something like, you know, Real Life or, you know, those people are just dying to get on those types of shows.
Yeah, yeah, there are. I wasn't one of them, I guess.
Yeah. Which one could you have been on? Which
It was the season that was in China.
Oh.
First off, let me explain the situation. I wasn't actually guaranteed a slot on the show.
No.
But I.
Whereas
I was,
the marmots
were
guaranteed.
Well,
that was.
I
a
was
dead,
guaranteed a chance at the marmots.
Yeah, that was a dead certainty. Okay.
But I had made it through the process to the point where they needed me to commit to doing the show with signing all the legal paperwork.
You just can't commit. Is that it?
I couldn't commit. It was frightening, yeah. So
Do you have regrets about it, not committing?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
So then you just decided you didn't want to be involved in that kind of thing? Or?
Well, no, it was a little more complicated than that.
Okay. Well, then forget it. I don't want to
I had a...
No, really, I don't want to hear it.
Okay, good. Yeah. I think we're short on time.
Yeah, no, we all have complications. I just don't want to hear about them, you know. I'm a guy, you're a guy.
Yeah,
it's not what we talk about, the complications.
Right. You're right.
So anyhow, the marmots, now we can talk about that. Now, these marmots are, a lot of people think they're varmints, but they're not.
Right. A lot of people think varmints. Varmints is not an actual animal.
No, but a marmot is.
A marmot is, yes.
But it looks just like a groundhog.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Because a groundhog is a marmot.
But is a marmot a groundhog?
No. Not exactly.
Okay, now...
There are 14 species of marmot, of which the groundhog is one.
So a groundhog is just a lousy species of a marmot.
Yeah,
really.
It's the only
it's a subspecies.
It's the no, it's a full species.
Full species.
It's the only species that we don't call something marmot.
The groundhog.
It's a groundhog or a woodchuck. We call it the woodchuck or the groundhog.
Oh,
whereas
okay.
Other marmots are called the Alaska marmot.
Alaska
or
marmot.
The hoary marmot. Okay. The yellow-bellied marmot.
Yellow-bellied marmot. You don't call that to their face. You would call that to their face. A yellow-bellied marmot.
Yeah.
Where are those found?
Colorado, Great Basin.
Okay.
Yeah, western U.S.
And the Arctic ones, the ones that you have studied, are there unique
Unique species found only in mainland Alaska, one of three endemic mammals endemic to mainland Alaska.
Is endemic good or bad? I can't remember.
It's a big word that makes it sound good.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I've been called endemic once, and I didn't know what to do. I forget who she was, but I wonder what her point was. Okay, so they're endemic. They're only found in the Arctic and in Alaska. Or are they found in? They find them in Russia and Siberia. They
no, make across no there? Different species in Siberia.
They never paddled across.
No.
Can they swim?
They may have walked across.
Yeah.
When they had the opportunity.
Yeah. Can marmots swim?
Yes, marmots can swim.
Are they hibernators?
Yes.
They are.
Hibernators.
So you had to go across like in the winter and dig into their dens to see how many were sleeping in there?
No.
How do you find out how many are in a... Because you had to count them, right? You did a count, right?
Well, that was one thing I was doing, yeah. I was collecting specimens for the museum here. I work at the University Museum of the North.
Mm-hmm. And, yes. Which has like the largest mammal collection anywhere. Just about.
Largest collection of Alaska mammals.
Alaska yes. mammals.
Yes.
Anywhere.
It's
anywhere. Alaska mammals, yeah. Anywhere.
I think it's the 10th largest collection of mammals in North America.
But it's the furthest north collection of mammals.
It is.
Anywhere.
Right. That's correct.
Farthest north. Excuse me. Lyle gets very upset if I say furthest instead of farthest. Okay. All right. So you're going in their dens and counting them, but that you're over with that?
No, I never went into any dens. I only went after them when they were out of their dens, which okay. is the summertime.
And they're hard to count when they're running around, right? They're
well, they're
and then
up
do you
above
estimate
tree
how
line,
many
so.
Siblings they have? Then, or?
Not really. I just counted them and collected a few as representative.
Collect? When you say collect, you mean killed?
Yeah.
Okay. It's for science. Perfectly right. fine. You didn't eat them or anything?
They're well, I may have.
You have eaten it?
Yeah.
This is getting pretty sick all of a sudden, you know? So you would eat a marmot, but you wouldn't go on Survivor? What's the matter with you? Who am
like
I talking to here?
Yeah.
The Gundersons are all like this, though. You know, so, okay, let me get this straight. I'll get back his nut. And what you've actually learned, you've uncovered new truths about the marmots.
Yes.
And that's rather important.
Well, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
What have you learned about marmots that was unknown before?
Well, specific to the Alaska marmots, there are three species of marmot in Alaska.
No.
The woodchuck, which we've covered.
We glanced over it. I don't know if it covered it.
Right. Yeah.
I might have missed that session. It. I don't know. Maybe we did cover it.
And that's a lowland species
yeah.
found in lowland habitats. And then there are two alpine marmot species, the hoary marmot and the Alaska marmot.
Okay.
So there was, before I started, there was some confusion about the distribution of those two species and somewhat of the taxonomy, whether or not, well, the Alaska marmot was first described as a subspecies of the hoary marmot.
Uh-huh.
So that created some confusion.
Especially for the hoary marmot.
Right.
Do they interbreed? I don't mean to pry, but can a hoary marmot interbreed with, let's say, a yellow-bellied marmot or an Arctic marmot?
I don't know if that's been tested, but they have different numbers of chromosomes.
You might want to go this way in your future.
Maybe.
Set them up and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, so step back.
So well, they have yeah. different chromosome numbers, so it's likely that wouldn't work out.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So they really couldn't interbreed then? If it wouldn't, probably
so.
Wouldn't come up.
Though, they might
right?
try.
Yeah. But. Were they all part of a species habitat, and then they migrated or something? Is that sort of like there's an evolution or migratory pattern among the?
Yeah, there's something like that. there are certainly an ancestral marmot, which we believe
a common marmot ancestor.
Yes,
the missing marmot they call it.
Right. Mm-hmm. That we believe they originated in North America, and then have since. Diversified into, well, it's a little complicated.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'll brace myself.
Let's go with it. So they've diversified in North America into four species. There's the hoary marmot.
Hoary.
Yellow-bellied.
Yeah.
The Olympic marmot from the Olympic Peninsula in Washington.
In Washington.
And the Vancouver Island marmot.
On the island? Just on the island?
Yes, just on the island. And then,
so you had to get there. How did you get to the island then? If they don't swim.
Well, at one point it wasn't an island.
Okay.
So,
all right, your point
they were
there.
Probably left behind there. Yep.
One point for you.
Yep. So, and then there are there's a group of species then in Asia, and that group of species also is more closely related to the Alaska marmot, which is found in North America, and the woodchuck. So the Alaska marmot and the woodchuck are actually more closely related to all Asian marmots. So this leads us to believe...
What Asian marmot? Did you mention Asian
marmots? Asian marmots. There are eight species of marmots found in Asia and Europe.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. What a kettle of marmots. Yeah. This is like shooting marmots in a barrel here. This is a big kettle of marmots.
It's complicated.
It's varmints. Did the word varmint actually come from marmot? Do you know, just a corruption of...
I don't know.
Okay. No. Doesn't matter.
Some people, I would think they've been called varmints just by their nature.
Varmints, yeah.
Yeah.
Varmints just covers everything.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So the point is then that...
Well, you asked about some evolution and some migration.
Downstate Illinois.
So originated in North America.
Yeah.
At one point, Asia and North America were connected via the land bridge between Alaska and Russia.
Okay.
So some ancestral marmot crossed that bridge into Asia.
Whose name has been lost in the sands.
Right.
In the sands of marmot time.
Yep.
And the great explorer marmot.
You know, the eight species of Asian and European marmots arose from that ancestor, and then we believe that the Alaska marmot represents another crossing back from Asia into Alaska.
All right, and then. So, well, let me ask you this, then. Is there public money involved in the study? Right. I withdraw that. Your witness.
Yes, withdrawn.
Withdrawn. But you are strictly Arctic yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. No interest at all in other marmots.
Peripheral entrance interest.
Sideways glance at the yellow belly. Or curiosity about the Asian.
Somewhat, yeah. Probably.
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever spoken with? I mean, researchers must come from all over the world, I would think. When they hear about what you're doing with these marmots,
you'd be surprised there aren't many.
No. I mean, is there an Asian equivalent of a Gunderson?
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
But you've never met them in these conferences. Are there conferences of small mammal guys get together?
There's an international conference.
Is it a rodent or a small mammal?
It's a rodent.
Rodent.
And a small mammal.
And both.
Yes.
You can be both. Okay.
Yeah, there is an international conference in Italy.
Did you go to that?
I didn't, but another grad student here did.
What are we going to do with you, Gunderson? You don't want to be on Survivor. It would have been wonderful for your marmot to spread the word about marmots, marmotology. And then the conference, you didn't want to do that?
Right, either. There wasn't enough funding for that.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right, that's okay. All right, okay. And now this is the paper that's just being published by you.
Well, published by the Journal of Mammalogy.
By Mammalogy.
Written by me.
Written by you. And this is kind of a groundbreaker.
It is for me. It's my first published manuscript.
Yeah. Congratulations. They're published now, so that's good.
Right.
Yeah.
It also, I got the cover art. And so it's the first published photograph of an Alaska marmot in its natural habitat.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations. Have you had feedback yet on your article?
It's being released on the 14th.
Yeah, okay. So almost even as we speak.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Aaron Gunderson, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank
you. We've opened our eyes to a new way of looking.
Yeah.
Thank you. Aaron Gunderson from the UAF. The Marmot Man. Okay, there then. Mary Dirty, age 84, from Seattle. You don't really need to put your age on here, dear, unless you want to. It's not required. I don't know. We don't want your age or your Social Security number or anything, you know. Because we don't want to pry.
What?
What? Okay, no, I'm just saying.
What do you want to know?
Nothing. I'm just saying, nothing. I was just talking out loud. The story here, though, Mary is a granddaughter and I drove my motorhome up here, drove all over Alaska till we ended up here. Then she flew off and abandoned me.
She did that. She went home because she had to go back to her job.
Are you sure you don't want the Dr. Phil show? Fairly serious, abandoning your grandmother in a motorhome in Alaska.
And all alone.
And all alone. How is that possible that she would do that to you?
Well, she had to go back to her job.
Well, we all have problems.
And I've got one now.
How are you? How are you? How are you going to? What are you going to do?
I guess I'm going to get behind the wheel and drive.
How long are you going back to Seattle?
Yes. Okay. That's where I live.
All right. You got to do that there, and then and you looking for, are you looking for a driver? Someone that wants to?
Well, I'm kind of picky.
What do you need in a driver?
Well, someone that's got a good sense of direction, primarily.
Can, well, south, how hard is that, you know?
Can read a map. And preferably female.
Okay, a female who can read a map is going to be... It's going to be easy. That's what I mean. It's be no problem.
Well, I don't know. I don't do so well myself.
You know, with maps? Do you have GPS or anything?
No, I don't.
I got a little in my back right now, actually. Supposed to clear up the... okay. Well, you know what? Do you want people to try and get in contact with you if they're interested? Like females who can read maps. And don't mind a nice drive to Seattle with a very nice lady.
I think I'll just wing it alone.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could help then. Thank you very much. And anyway, what do we have for Mary here?
For Mary, we've got the Alaskan Boreal Bouquet Gourmet Herbal Vinegars and Dried Herbs from Gretchen of Basically Basil, the Tanana Valley Farmer's Market farmer.
Yeah, okay, cool. Good luck there. Are you going to be all right, though? Now I'm worried about you. You'll be fine? Okay, all right. She's tough. Now, here we got Joyce Bateman, since we're on, like, small mammals or rodents, and you can be both. Why do Alaska ground squirrels like socks? Joyce, don't leave us dangle like this. Can I get you to come over here if you would and explain to us, are you familiar with the ground squirrel?
Well, I'm not a biologist.
No, okay. But you play one on television? What are you in?
In real life, I'm a medical transcriptionist.
Okay. Well, that covers a host of sins, though, doesn't it? Because you could be transcribing all kinds of things.
Right. Yeah, I know a lot about a lot of people in Fairbanks, but they don't...
Let's reveal some of that right now, shall we?
I would, but then I'd have to kill you, so...
Okay. Yeah. All right. So just tell the ground squirrels and socks.
Yeah, well, my boyfriend went out to the Toklat, and he came back with a story about ground squirrels. That was pretty scary.
That's all you're going to tell us?
Well, they took his socks.
Was he wearing them at the time?
No. He was drying them out.
Okay.
So they were out there airing, and then all of a sudden they were gone.
Yeah.
And he had to go retrieve them from the Arctic ground squirrel.
How far did he have to go to retrieve them?
I don't know, but...
I mean, into the squirrel, or...?
Well, it finally dropped it. Right before the hole, and he went down the hole. So it was
okay.
Like,
did you see Gunderson out there looking for him? Maybe Gunderson took his socks. No, he wasn't.
Well, no ground squirrels were hurt in this exchange.
Thanks very much. You've made my day. My morning. You've made my morning. Joyce Bateman. Kathy Ross from North Pole says, I live with a cowboy, and he hardly talks at all. What can I do to make him talk to me more? Well, Kathy, if you whinnied once in a while, he would not only talk to you, he would pat your flanks and give you the occasional lump of sugar or apple, open palm style. Where are you? Yes. Have you tried that? Yes. They only talk to their horses. That's a well-known fact. Well, that's a well-known fact, too. Why don't you come down here? Because they'd rather have you step on their feet than me. And we'll just settle this once and for all. You knew he was a cowboy when you married him.
Well, we're not married.
Well, you knew when you didn't marry him he was a cowboy.
I did.
You knew this guy here was a cowboy. It was obvious that he was a cowboy.
He talked more when we were dating.
Well, that's a male thing. We imitate, you know.
Yeah.
No, when you're dating, it's entirely different. You try, right? You know, you gentlemen know what I mean. You try to, like, show an interest in someone else. And once you're with someone, what's the point in that? You've already demonstrated an interest and you're there, so obviously you're interested. So there's nothing more to be said.
Well, you've summed him up right there.
Thanks, dear. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy, and is he here? How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine.
Are you a firefighter, or what is that?
I am Assistant Fire Chief, Toke Volunteers.
You are? How you doing?
Good, good.
Do you have a pager? I mean, do you carry a pager where you could be paged at any moment?
Everywhere we go. Yep, even 200 miles down the road.
Yeah. And yep. If your pager goes off, what do? Turn it off and...
Yeah, I ask her, what's that?
Go back in the bar and finish your drink.
Well, something like that.
Nice to have you. Your name is?
Brian Thompson.
Brian. Thank you, Brian. And thank you for what you do. Garrett Everidge, too. Garrett Everidge says you should let me show off my bride of 1 month. And I think we should. Garrett, I think that's a sweet thing. Sweet thing to do. Garrett's going to show off his bride. Everybody, come on, Garrett. Bring the bride with you. Show off the bride. Hi, dear. Hi. He's worth showing off.
Yeah, right here. We got married down in Palmer.
You got what?
Married in Palmer.
You did, yeah?
Yeah.
Ceremony? Or?
Pretty small. In a nice garden.
Nice garden?
Yeah.
Just a month ago, huh?
Roughly.
Yeah. Roughly a month, yeah.
Yeah.
She's worth showing off, I think.
Yeah.
Do this everywhere, ask to show off your bride?
Yes.
Or you're just showing off. Is that what you're doing?
Mainly showing off.
Do you mind being showing off?
No. Can you sing me happy birthday? That was one of my questions.
Oh, no, I really, it wouldn't be happy if I sang it.
No, I
can wish you a happy birthday. And to both of you, and congratulations on your marriage. And we have a little something for you for all those occasions, don't
Indeed we do, Mike. We've got an insulated cooler bag and a bottle coolie from the Silver Gulch Brewery, and we've got an Alaskan-made wooden bowl from the Great Alaskan Bowl Company.
What is your name? Sarah. Garrett and the lovely Sarah, ladies and gentlemen. The Everidges. We are going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz, because that's what we do here. One of the many things we do, and if we do it, it's deductible on a tax deductible basis. So we got a we should have a gentleman this time, don't you think? Just in fairness. Now here's a guy way over there. Yeah, this guy way over there. And he seems like he wants to do it. Where do you go? I'll meet you down here. Okay? He was lurking in the shadows over there, but I think he's okay from what I can see. Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. And you are?
Nathan Colvin.
Nathan, step over here just a minute, Nathan, because we're feeding back just a little bit. No, not that far.
All right.
Nathan, what do you do in life?
I am a CH-47 pilot.
CH-47 pilot. What is that, Nathan?
It's a Chinook helicopter. The Army flies
it. Chinook helicopters.
Commander of the Sugar Bears at Fort Wainwright.
The Sugar Bears commander we got here. Give me one reason you should play this quick.
Because one time on a flight, I listened to the show on the radio, the navigation radio, instead of the audio radio, because I was pretty desperate.
Desperate. He listens on his navigation radio on the Chinook helicopters. That's the best reason I've ever heard. Come on up here and do it. Yeah. Okay. Is it Wayne, did you say?
Nathan.
Nathan, yes.
It's close.
Okay, Wayne. Mind if I call you Wayne?
That's fine.
So what is your rank then, actually?
I'm a captain.
You're a captain?
Yes.
You still got to fly if you're a captain? I thought that was just for lower ranks.
I get to fly, yeah.
You get to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably one of my last jobs where I'll get to, but...
Yeah. And do you like flying the helicopters?
I do.
Yeah. Are they must break down into different types of guys in the military, right? The copter... guys who fly copters are different than guys who fly, obviously, fighters or cargo planes and stuff.
Yeah, there's different communities. We're a little bit more laid back than others, I think.
You aren't? The copter guys are more laid back?
Yeah, and even the Chinook guys more than other helicopter guys, I think.
You're extremely laid back.
Yeah. And a little bigger, I think, too.
Yeah. So what do you mean? You're like, you fly them like horizontally, or what do you mean? Just personality-wise.
It's kind of like the ice road truckers of helicopter rides.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's a cool thing. How long have you been doing that?
6 years now.
6 years. Yeah. Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Well, you certainly qualified for the quiz with your response.
I hope so.
Yes, and you know how it works? Someone out there calls in, plays along with you?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Deep breaths. Last round looked pretty challenging, but I'm going to be...
Okay, no.
I'm prepared.
Okay, you're good.
Since this show is an encore performance, don't call to answer the qualifier, but try us another time.
Thank you very much. We want to know Seward's Folly, so-called, 1867. Alaska went for how much an acre in that so-called folly of Seward's? If you don't give us a call here, within how many cents, Jim?
Within...
A nickel? Okay, fine.
You bet.
All right. Sue's on the line from Nome. Hi, Sue.
Hey, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing real good. How are you, Michael?
Oh, I'm fine. What are you up to this morning?
Oh, are we pretending it's morning?
Yes, we were pretending it's morning. Are you just getting up then, huh?
Well, you know what? I retired recently, so I sleep in now.
Oh, that's a good thing. Sue, when Alaska was sold by the Russians, it was probably in kopecks or something like that, or whatever they use, their rubles. But what did it go for an acre?
2 cents an acre.
2 cents an acre is right, Sue. Holy cow! She knew that one. Not a bad deal. Of course, 2 cents in 1867, probably a quarter now, so that's a little bit different. Yes. What do you do there in Nome, Sue?
Well, until recently,
I worked
for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game doing public information for Western and Northern Alaska.
Oh.
But I've retired, and my goal is to write and paint about what I love about Alaska.
Oh, how wonderful. That's fantastic.
Sue, it doesn't pay much, but no. I'm hoping.
Sue, this is Nathan.
Hi, Sue.
Nathan.
Hi.
He flies those Chinook helicopters.
Yes, very impressed.
Yes,
we see a lot of helicopters out here.
Okay. All right, the two of you are a team now. You work together, okay? Everything is collaborative on this.
Need all the help I can get.
Okay. Jim Packard, you tell us categories.
Categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, so you go first. Sue?
Things you should have known in school if you were paying attention.
Okay. Did Charles Fairbanks have anything more to do with Fairbanks than William McKinley did with Mount McKinley?
Nathan, my best guess is no, but what do you think?
I know McKinley didn't have anything to do with Mount McKinley, just somebody decided to name it after him, trying to get a favor, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I'm guessing yes. No, I'm just kidding.
He was kidding. Noah is right. We know that. Come on. Nothing. Politics. It was politics. Yes. No. Nothing. Nothing. It should have been Densmore's Mountain or Denali, which it is. Actually is. It is.
One right, no wrong.
Okay. That's good. What's left there, Jim?
Current events, people, places, science, odds and ends.
Nathan, Captain?
Sorry. Places.
Places it is. Okay. All right. Explain the following statement. Betty and I drove to Girdwood to dip net for hooligans. Explain.
Oh, Girdwood is you go past Anchorage down south, a little bit further, around Turnagain Arm, and step out right time of year.
Yeah.
Stick your dip net in like the ones we got behind us and try to get you a fish.
Hooligans are fish then?
I hope so.
Sue, you go along with that?
I do. Little cigar-like fish.
Little cigar-like fish. Yes, I guess that's right. I have no idea. I'm thinking it worked. I was concerned when I read it in the news liner. And
you're right, no wrong.
Okay, there you go. What's left there?
Current events, people, science, odds and ends.
Sue, back to you.
I'll take current events.
Current events, right out of the news. Yes, it is. All right, so do you have to have your car inspected or don't you?
I guess it depends on where you live.
Okay.
I was going to say, in Nome, you certainly don't have to have your car inspected.
No. You have to have your head inspected, I guess. No, I'm just kidding. You know that.
Sue, you're kind of on your own.
I guess we're talking about Fairbanks.
I've been out and living in the woods for the last week, so I'm not too current on my current events, unfortunately. I know if you're Anchorage and Fairbanks, bro, you used to have to, unless something changed in the last week.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you have to or don't you? No?
Oh, dear.
You did, though, until...
I know you did, and then they did away with it.
Yeah.
And so we'll say no.
Is no right? No? No is... Okay, then we'll accept it. They won the quiz. They can quit right here if they wanted to, Jim.
That's right. They can be winning candidates, or they can, if they get one wrong, they have to follow the Palin principle and leave this quiz.
Okay. Do you want to go on and win the grand jackpot? You can, or you can just take what you've won so far.
Oh, what do you want? What do you want to do, Sue? We're on a streak.
Oh, I don't want to abdicate.
Okay. All right, so they're going on. They're going on. What remains there, Jim?
People, science, odds, and ends.
People, science, odds, and ends. Is it
yes.
Nathan?
Odds and ends?
Odds and ends. Could be anything. Let's see if it is. Yes, it is. If it's low fat you're after, you should bag and eat one of the following. A sharp-tailed grouse, a widgeon.
Oh, sorry, the dog barked.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I said widgeon, he barked. I don't know what a widgeon is. Or a ptarmigan. A ptarmigan. Sorry. The lowest fat of these, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
Boy.
Sharp-tailed grouse, the widgeon. You know what a widgeon is? What is it? Like a pigeon that's got a wig?
It's a bird.
The bird's like a
it's
pigeon?
It's a duck.
It's a duck?
So we're looking for the lowest fat.
Oh, it's a duck.
And,
or a ptarmigan, which is an Italian sausage, I think. What is a ptarmigan?
It's kind of like the grouse, actually.
Oh, okay. Similar.
I think it's the state bird of Alaska.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, that's good, then. I love them, then, in that case. I didn't know it was that.
Well, I had four grouse in my front yard yesterday, and they looked pretty skinny. What do you think?
You're saying sharp-tailed grouse? He's leading towards the grouse. Sue?
You're from Fish and Game. Help me out here, Sue.
Boy, that's a tough one. Nathan, I don't know. Can you get a read there? Whether that sounded good?
I think it's between grouse or ptarmigan.
But I'm thinking maybe the short-tailed grouse.
Yes, the grouse. That's right. The sharp-tailed grouse. Very low fat, 0.7% fat. You can eat a lot of them. Okay. What's up there, Jim?
For right, no wrong comes to people or science.
Comes down to this. Okay.
People or science.
People or science.
I think it's Sue's turn.
Is it?
It is.
Sue. People or science.
Oh dear. People.
People? Okay. Kind of survey results or whatever. Have you? According to the male-female ratios, 20, a dozen, or 8 Fairbanks women are entitled to 2 Fairbanks men. So we're talking here, 20...
But why would they want them?
Okay. I got no comment.
I take that back. I married one, so I really shouldn't be so hard.
Okay. Well, see, you could have married two if this is... And they're cheaper the more you marry, actually. So 20, a dozen, or 8 Fairbanks women are entitled to 2 men, given the difference in the ratios of men to women. in Fairbanks? 20, a dozen, or 8? Nathan?
8.
8 is right. Sue, you go along with that?
That's right, 8. 8 of you. 8 lucky women.
Okay.
And Sue, you've won the plethora of prizes from the Fairbanks Farmers Market, including goat milk soap from Far Above Rubies, gourmet herbal vinegars from Basically Basil, a pair of handmade earrings from Denise Connors, a jar of Alaska Wildfire honey from the Toklat Apiaries, and beautiful ceramic bowls from Craig Chelodinas. Learn to prepare Alaska flora with Cheryl Stanek and Barbara Butcher's Collecting and Using Alaska's Wild Berries and Other Wild Products, including myriad recipes for Alaska plant species from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service, and while away the hours under the midnight sun playing What Do You Know, the Party Game, including the Michael Feldman bobblehead from NotMuch.com. And Nathan, you'll be heading out to the links with a pair of visitor special passes for golfing at the United States' northernmost course, including greens fees, cart rental, towel, and yardage book from North Star Golf Club. Then think of colder sports with a sweatshirt, water bottle, and authentic dog harness from the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race, run every February between Fairbanks and White Horse since 1984 from Yukon Quest. And widen your cultural horizons with a family membership to the University of Alaska Museum of the North, currently featuring the last polar bear facing the truth of a warming world from the Museum of the North. Congratulations.
Nathan.
Our next live shows in Madison are September 10th, 17th, and 24th. For tickets, call 608-262-2201 or click on notmuch.com.
Well, you know, this is not everything that is good in Fairbanks, but it's a lot of it. Most we got the salmon and we got the beer right here. And we got from Silver Gulch here, we got Glenn Brady, the genius behind Silver Gulch. And from Santa's Smokehouse, Virgil Umphenar. The umph is in the front. Yes. Okay. And over there at Santa's, how's business?
Say that again.
How was business over there at Santa's Smokehouse?
Business is fairly good right now. Yeah. We're fishing right now, though.
Yeah. Fishing
so
right
now? Right. We do a lot of custom processing for the public, but right now we're commercial fishing as well.
Yeah. And how is this season going as far as the fishing?
Well, for the chum salmon, it's going okay. Not real well, but our king salmon was a bust, so I had to bring a king salmon from the Kuskokwim River, not from the Yukon.
Oh, okay. I can't tell the difference just looking at it.
You can tell the difference of the taste, but we did bring you some caviar to try, and that's from the river right here.
Oh,
and
man.
It runs by Fairbanks from the Tanana River.
Wonderful. Wonderful caviar. And lox. You sell a lot of lox?
We sell quite a bit of lox.
Yeah. To the frozen, chosen?
Right, we sell it frozen.
Frozen for the frozen chosen, that's good. And this beer, Silver Gulch, has become famous now.
Indeed, at least in our neck of the woods, we'd like to think.
Yeah, and this started as sort of a Canadian beer, because you got all your stuff from Canada, didn't
correct.
You?
Correct, yeah. It's most of the pieces came from a brewery in near St. Catharines, Ontario, so south of Toronto. Yeah, it's. I feel self-conscious because I didn't bring enough for the crowd, and they look kind of thirsty and potentially dangerous. So.
Here's to you, though.
Cheers.
For all you do. Oh, this is a great beer.
Mm. And, even better.
Yeah, I think that with me.
Jim looks a little thirsty over there.
What do we use that caviar on there?
There we
go. We got something with the little crackers for the caviar?
I have crackers for the caviar. You want a little cream cheese or you want it straight?
I want it straight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where'd that little spoon go? There it is.
Little spoon,
right
here. No, I take my caviar straight.
And I did, since it's breakfast time or nearabouts, I brought a breakfast beer here to go with. It should go well with the caviar and the lox.
Oh, man, does that look good. Wow. Okay, let me get all this. Mmm, it's delicious.
Last year, Bon Appetit magazine selected our caviar as American Caviar of the Year.
Oh, it's delicious. It's so much better than that Russian stuff. Better than beluga. Fantastic. And this beer is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, what's in season right now of your beers?
In season right now, hoppy beer. At least that's my personal preference at the moment. But
hoppy beer.
Some Old Gurk IPA.
What is this we're drinking 55. Here?
That's Fairbanks Lager, kind of our flagship. But I did, as I mentioned, since it's breakfast time, I brought an oatmeal stout along. Sourdough oatmeal stout. So.
All right. These are the men to know. Virgil Humphenor. From Santa's Smokehouse and Glenn Brady from the Silver Gulch. I'm sorry I ran out of time. Are we going through all...
PRI, Public Radio International.